Hello, everyone. Today is Monday, October the 9th. I'm Ryan Hill.
I'm John Galantis.
And you're listening to Clearview Today with Dr. Abhidhan Shah, the daily show that engages mind and heart for the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can visit us online at clearviewtodayshow.com, or if you have any questions for Dr. Shah or suggestions for new topics, send us a text at 252-582-5028. Or you can email us at contact@clearviewtodayshow.com.
That's right, and you guys can help us keep the conversation going by supporting the show. You can share it online with your friends and family. Leave us a good review on iTunes or Spotify. Absolutely nothing less than 5 stars. I will and have hulked out in the past. We're going to leave a link in the description so you can do just that.
And the verse of the day today comes from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18. For Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit.
Mm-hmm. There's so much, and this is one of the things where people say, I think Peter really gets a bad rap, where people are like, well, you know, Peter was an uneducated fisherman. Like, he really was not that smart, and yet he was with Jesus. It's like,
read that. Read 1 and 2 Peter.
Like, read what he just said. Christ also suffered. Right. Suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust. And then I really love the reasoning behind it here, that he might bring us to God.
Yeah.
And the more I've been thinking about the simplicity of the gospel, I'm working with Dr. Shah on a new book right now. Really the sequel to the first gospel, which is coming out soon. But just this idea of this is God's plan of salvation to bring us back to him. Mm-hmm. And that's why Jesus died on the cross.
Yeah, it's beautiful because like you just said, it's simple in its message. Mm-hmm. Christ suffered once for all sins, the just for the unjust. I mean, that transaction, that payment, mm-hmm. should always give us pause and should always make us remember we have a lot to be grateful for. We have a lot to be thankful for, that we have a Heavenly Father who loved us enough to send his son to die in our place.
I want to start a new segment on the Clearview Today show, a segment that we have done in the past.
Okay.
But not on this show. We had another show before this. Oh, it was a weekly podcast that we transitioned and made a new show, this daily show, Clearview Today. So I want to bring back one of our segments, which is the advice no one needed.
Advice no one needed.
Advice no one needed.
We love advice no one needed.
We love giving advice.
It's even unsolicited, though, unwarranted, and unwanted.
It's unlicensed. This is not advice that anybody ever needed or asked for in their life. A lot of it probably isn't even that good. This is kind of like all that vital information for your everyday life.
Sure.
Starring Lori Beth Denberg herself. Yeah, people not born in the 90s are like, what?
I don't understand what you're talking about. What are the words that you're saying?
Here's some advice. I think, and I know, and I'm convinced that at the end of every shower you take, you should turn the water to cold.
Ew, horrible. Instantly hate it.
I'm telling you, there is something refreshing about... Now, I'm not saying take an ice cold shower the whole time. I'm not saying that. I'm not one of these like David Goggins, like Joe Rogan. What's that guy, Tony Robbins, who does that like plunge to just get yourself... I'm not saying none of that. I'm saying take a hot shower, enjoy it, but then at the end of it, before you go to bed, turn it just to cold. Turn it to like chilly or cold and let that cold water run down your head. It feels so good. And it feels refreshing.
I understand that there have been studies done on this. I understand mm-hmm. there's benefits to this. That sounds horrible.
No.
I don't want to do that. I've been in a cold shower before. It is awful. Yeah. It's like a nightmare.
Yeah, it's awful when you don't want it to be cold.
Right, but right now, I don't want it to be cold.
I'm saying at the end of a long day, turn it to chilly. Let that cold water run down your back. It's going to shock you. It's going to send your muscles into shock. But I'm telling you, once you get in the habit of it, it's going to feel so, so nice.
I would even say do it at the beginning of the day.
You can.
I've been doing cold showers where you do a normal warm shower. And then at the very end of the shower, you just turn it all the way to cold and you hold it for like 45 seconds to a minute.
I wouldn't go icy.
Yes.
I don't really usually go like icy all the way cold.
Icy.
I will do pretty chilly just to kind of get my senses away. And then it's cool because you take your hair and you like, and then all that cold water just runs down your back.
That sounds
And then it's
awful.
Like, oh.
That sounds terrible. I have a headache thinking about that.
No.
Yeah.
No, it feels real, real nice. Well, let's see what Dr. Shah, I know what Dr. Shah is going to say. He's going to say no way in a million years am I
that
taking a cold shower.
That sounds awful.
But try it. Try it at the house.
If you guys try it, text in and let us know what you think.
And tune in every single week because we're going to be bringing you more advice that nobody needed. And if you've got some advice that you want us to share online, text us in. What's the number to text us?
It is 252-582-5028. And of course, you can visit us online at clearviewtodayshow.com. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this.
Hey everyone, my name's Ellie.
And I'm David.
And we want to take a minute and let you know how we can actually serve you as you're listening to Clearview today.
The Bible paints an extraordinary picture of who we are as a church body. The mission of Clearview Church is to lead all people into a life-changing, ever-growing relationship with Jesus Christ. A huge part of leading people is praying for them. A big reason that Christians have unanswered prayers in their life is because they're not praying.
You know, 1 John 5:15 says, "And if we know that He hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we have asked of Him." If you're listening to the Clearview Today show, we want to know how we can pray for you as well.
There's a number of ways that you can get in touch with us at Clearview and share your prayer request, but the best way is by texting us at 252-582-5028. You can also send us an email at prayer@clearviewbc.org, or you can download the Clearview app on iTunes or Google Play. You know, on that app, there's a dedicated prayer wall that helps us to get to know what's going on in your life, how we can pray for you, and how we can take any necessary steps to get you moving in the right direction.
Thanks for listening. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to Clearview Today with Dr. Abadan Shah, the daily show that engages mind and heart for the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can visit us online at clearviewtodayshow.com, or if you have any questions or suggestions for new topics, send us a text at 252-582-5028.
That's right, and if today's your first time ever joining us here on the Clearview Today Show, we want to welcome you, let you know exactly who's talking to you today. Dr. Abadan Shah is a PhD in New Testament Textual Criticism, professor at Carolina University, author, full-time pastor, and the host of today's show. You can find all of his work at his website, that's abadanshah.com.
Dr. Shah, let me ask you a personal question.
Sure.
Have you ever received bad advice in your life?
Oh yeah,
that's really loaded, Ryan.
What do you?
That's
what do
a really
you do?
Loaded
hold,
question.
Hold, excuse me.
This is my bad
question.
Radio.
This
dude.
Is my question.
Go ahead.
What do you do? What do you do with that advice?
Well, unfortunately, I followed bad directions, bad cooking. What do you call it, tips? Mm. I've followed some.
Have you ever been? Have you ever been purposely misled in your life? Maybe by someone that you considered a friend or a co-host?
I don't know where this is going.
I gave some advice on our new segment that was to take a cold shower. And Ryan, the MO of the very first segment ever was to completely not only disregard them advice, but to turn my own pastor against me.
Well, here's the thing. It's not just advice no one needed. It's advice that harmed people.
To take a cold,
hot
showers or chilly showers, Dr. Shah?
I hate to admit it, hot showers.
You like right. hot showers
right.
better.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes.
Most people do.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
But, you... Fun fact.
Yep, let's hear it.
Fun fact.
Let's hear it.
Thomas Jefferson, when he would wake up in the morning, this was something that they did back then, and they thought that it had some health benefits, which is they would have this cold... almost ice cold basin of water.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they would do, get ready for this, is they would dip their feet in ice cold water and sit there.
It's Yikes. It's a little much. It's a little much.
And they would sit there. And they said there was some, it did something. And I know I was never going to do it, so I never took the time to like investigate. Why is it that in the pre-revolutionary period, people did things like that?
Yeah. I guess if nothing else, it wakes them up for sure.
Yeah.
See, I'm not saying it's got to be ice cold. I'm just saying at the end, when you're done and you're ready to get out, just turn it to chilly a little bit and just let it run down your neck. And just feels good on your head, especially if you run hot.
Sometimes I will feel like I'm overheated, but most of the time I'm a little bit on the cooler side.
Mm.
So if I end my shower on a cool note, I feel like I'll never be warm again.
How about this? Let's strike it all from the record.
Okay.
Let's say, how about this? Here's some advice that no one needed or no one asked for, but you certainly need. Get yourself in a small group. How's
there
that
is.
Sound? You like that?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And you can discuss the benefits or drawbacks of cold showers within the small group.
That would be an egregious misuse of your small group.
That is very
true. Did you listen to the sermon at all?
I did. We're talking today about the importance of small groups, the importance of, you know, the community that God has given us, especially in these smaller group settings. And depending on where you grew up or depending on your background in church, small groups may mean a variety of things to you, or that may be something you're completely unfamiliar with, but there is biblical merit for the importance of a small group.
Absolutely. I talk about this all the time because I know I can be sort of an isolationist. I am fine with being by myself. Give me a good book or leave me in a bookstore or library, or I'm out hunting or fishing by myself. You know, early morning, 5 o'clock up there in the tree stand, it's very quiet and peaceful, or out on the lake, no boats, nothing. I'm in this John boat and I'm just having a good time by myself. Yeah, it has a lot of merit and a lot of benefits, but we are called to live in a community.
That's right.
We are called to live in community. And there are so many benefits that we miss out when we don't live in community. And in fact, it's an integral part of the Christian life.
Yeah.
I would say.
Absolutely.
We're really emphasizing that at Clearview, and we hope that listeners, viewers, would also take this challenge and figure out why and how they can be part of a small group, whether it's Sunday school or a discipleship group or a Bible study. Like at Clearview, we have Tuesday morning, 6 o'clock prayer time for men. And we have men who show up. We have a steady stream or a group of 50-some men, and usually about 40, close to 40 show up.
Yeah.
And it's about 50-some who will come.
It's one of those things that I'm glad you framed it the way you do, because I think people automatically assume that if you're in ministry or if you're a pastor, you're automatically an extroverted person because of the type of work that you do. And I like that being introverted is not an excuse to not do this.
Right.
Like saying that this is who I am, this is my personality, but God is calling us to overcome our personalities.
I read this a long time ago. I think it was probably, I want to say maybe Warren Wiersbe, maybe somebody else. I can't remember who. But he made a statement that I did not agree with at first. I didn't like it. But then in time, it sort of made sense. He said, if you're an introverted person, then you are a proud person. And I was like, oh, come on, that's just my personality. How can you say that's proud? No, what you're saying is, I'm not going to make an effort to come talk to you.
Yeah.
You have to make an effort and come talk to me.
Wow. That is a good
point. I'm going to sit right here until you come talk to me. And if you don't, that's fine. I won't come to you.
That's definitely a different spin on it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it is as an introvert, it's like, number one, that's half the population that's like, oh, come on, I'm not proud. Like half the population's proud. Yeah, kind of. Because that is exactly the root
of
what you're doing and what you're thinking. It's one of those things that I think we tend to put so much of our own identity on it. But again, that is what we're doing. We're focusing it on me. And the whole purpose of small groups is to focus on others and to ultimately harness that focus and bring it back to God and devote that time to being in community with other Christians.
Right. It's a time to help people refocus their minds and their hearts on Jesus Christ. That's the ultimate goal. It's not just bro time. This is not just sisterhood.
Yeah.
This is about getting someone who's going through a difficult time, helping that someone to set their focus back upon Christ.
Yeah.
That's what small groups to me ultimately are really about.
You preached a message about this a little while ago, and I love the text that you went to because it's one that we often wouldn't think of when we think of small groups. You went to the book of Job and talked about those friends in Job's life who came alongside him.
Some would say the first small group.
the first small group. Yeah. And just to kind of see it in a different light, that was really eye opening for me.
Yeah, when we talked about the cities of refuge, where you run to and find a place of compassion, you run to that place. You are the one running into a small group. This message was a little different. This message was about people in the small group running towards somebody who is struggling, or they are in a prison. Like Capture the Flag. Have you ever played Capture the Flag?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Never in real life, but I played it in Halo 2 a lot.
You've never played it in real life? Really?
I didn't have a lot of outside friends. Oh, I played Halo. Nicholas is back there laughing like he didn't also play Capture the Flag every single day in Halo 2.
Yeah. Well, I've seen Nicholas play Capture the Flag for real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is at Camp Living Water in Bryson City. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. You walk out and you're surrounded by these beautiful... Blue Ridge Mountains, it's just Smoky Mountains, really. It's just beautiful. And one night of the camp is, their prime time is playing Capture the Flag. Mm-hmm. And if you know the rules of Capture the Flag, each team has a flag or some object at their base, and the opposite team or teams must cross the line, go to the other team's base, and get the flag. Mm-hmm. Without getting tagged.
Right.
I mean, that's the key.
Right. Yeah, you can't
It's not just you walking over there and getting it. And so it's quite fun to watch. I played one time, but it was years ago. But it's fun to watch kids running and then getting tagged.
Yep.
And when you get tagged, you get thrown in jail. Mm-hmm. So jail is this like imaginary circle where you sit right next to the base. And so people get tagged and they have to go sit in the base of the enemy camp. Or sit in the jail. And then the team that you belong to is now supposed to cross over and not only capture the flag, but also set their own people free.
Mm-hmm. We used to have like a, there would be like a hula hoop or something. Kids be just like, getting out. Yeah.
Jailbreak.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember last year, both Nicholas and Thomas were there at the same time. And it was fun watching them because they were strategizing. They happened to be on the same team, which I'm not trying to be proud or anything, but they're pretty fast runners.
Yeah.
Both of them are very fast.
They are very fast.
Kind of overpowered when they're on the same team.
Yeah, they're on the same team. And I was like, I don't know who set this up, but it's not fair
to the other team.
It's not going
to
be good for the other team because they would like walk to each other. And I was, you know, watching them and they would like whisper a few things. And then next thing you know, they're just like walking around. All of a sudden they run.
Yep.
And one runs this way. Another one runs that way. Nick, you remember that? What do you think about that game, Nick?
It's a lot of fun. I enjoy playing that game.
Yeah. You like running and having like 15 people chase you?
Absolutely.
Nothing gets me out of bed faster.
But it's funny to watch. And I saw him this year too. But the best part is watching them strategize to set their people free.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And Job reminds me of that. Kind of unusual, but it reminds me because when, you know, Job's world collapsed. Mm-hmm. In a 24-hour period, Satan went to God. You know that. You know, he loves you. He serves you because of all that you do for him. Take it away and he will deny you to your face. Blah, blah, blah. And the Sabians, the Chaldeans, the fire from heaven, all this happens. The wind comes and knocks down the house, the great wind, destroying his house and also his children. Mm-hmm. And now Job is even covered in boils because God even allows Satan to touch his body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he is in a horrible place and he's sitting on a ash heap, scratching himself with a potsherd.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, his three friends, the Bible says it this way, Job 2:11. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Namathite, for they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him.
We give these guys a bad rep, but those are good friends. Like they were like distant, weren't they? Mm. Didn't they like really have to travel to get here?
They had to travel. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to get into all these place names. Many of them came after, because they are names of Abraham's descendants. But the places came later, mm-hmm. but the people were from these regions. Mm-hmm. But what gets me is that they, Yahad means they made an appointment. Means they called each other up somehow, sent messages, and said, let's meet at that crossroads, or let's meet at this oasis, or let's meet by that stream near that ford, and or whatever. They made an appointment so they can come and discuss, maybe even pray, and then go see Job.
Wow. It's one of those things where you really start to see this idea of small group coming forward. But at first, just the dedication that they have. And I like how you said they made the appointment. It was a priority for them to go and comfort their friend in his time of need.
Yeah. It wasn't
random.
Should we go? Yeah, it wasn't like I'll decide to go, or you know, maybe I'll go. It was without question. We're all going. Here's the game plan.
Yeah,
there's a game plan. That's the key there. It was not random. It was not just let's just run over there and just show my face and leave. Mm-hmm. And that what happens in most of the time when we have tragedy or funerals, people just want to show their face and leave.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But these guys, they came, and they came with a, as I use the word yahad, which means they came and they had a plan, an objective, a target. I can just picture these three characters standing under this tree. It seems like an oasis. Camels in the distance or nearby, the servants are watering them. Mm-hmm. And these three men are just, you know, one is arms folded, one is standing, leaning against the palm tree, one is sitting down. I don't know how that may have looked like, but that's how I imagined them. Mm-hmm. And they are heartbroken for their friend. They're really concerned for him. Now, let's pause there and do an application. How many of you men would love to have three friends like that in your life? Two friends.
Yeah.
One
even
friend.
Even just one.
Ladies, how many of you would love to have three friends or two or even one like this when tragedy strikes you or trials come into your life that they don't just, sometimes there's no show, but they don't just show up. They take the time to meet and discuss and talk so that they can come and nude means sway or shake their head in sympathy, and nekem means to console. Mm. So we can come and we can identify with him and we can comfort him. You say this, I'm going to say this, and let's pray and let's read the scripture. They came up with a plan.
Yeah. It's so encouraging. Do you think Job is one of the more misunderstood books? Because I feel like on the surface, we get it. But then you dive in and there's so much more to it, to where it's almost to the point where you really don't get Job unless you do dive deep.
George Bernard Shaw, smart guy, but not my favorite. But George Bernard Shaw was an Irish playwright, literary critic, and he said about Job, he said, "If I complain that I'm suffering unjustly, it is no answer to say, can you make a hippopotamus?"
Talking about how God was putting him.
Yeah, like Job is going through a difficult time and God is like, have you considered this? Have you considered that? Do you know what I can build? Can you see the Leviathan and the behemoth? Can you make them? And so George Bernard Shaw is asking the question, if I'm going through suffering and it's unfair, what's the use of asking me, can you make a hippopotamus? My answer to Bernard Shaw is, you completely misunderstood Job.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you totally missed the point.
As smart as you are, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
Victor Hugo, on the other hand, I think, again, he was a French playwright and all that. He had Christian upbringing, by the way, but it didn't. He fought against his Roman Catholic upbringing, I guess, the bad parts of it. Because, you know, you see that come out in Hunchback of Notre Dame and all that. But he also wrote Les Miserables. But he said something completely opposite about the book of Job. He said it this way. He said, tomorrow, if all literature was to be destroyed, and it was left to me to retain one work only, I should save Job.
Wow.
All literature destroyed. If one is left, I should save Job.
That's the one.
Because Job does all of it. Mm-hmm. It talks about creation. It talks about the fall. It talks about the flood, because Ice Age is mentioned in the book of Job. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to talk about that, but maybe another time. And then let's go back to those friends, because those friends came, and once they got there, they saw Job's condition, and they just sat and they wept. Mm. They tore their clothes. They threw dust over their heads. It's kind of like a sign of mourning. And then it says in Job 2:13, so they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him.
Wow.
For they saw that his grief was very great.
Do you think people take the age of this book or the age of this work, like they completely are willing to accept, okay, this is the most ancient book in the Old Testament, but they almost make Job and his friends primitive,
very basic, underdeveloped theology, just just a caveman-like theology.
Yeah, like it's almost like we see, okay, this book is so old, it almost doesn't apply to me at all.
Yeah,
like if Leviticus,
this, yeah.
Like if those things in Leviticus don't apply, even though they may have happened earlier chronologically, I feel like people will take that Old Testament stuff and say, all right, if that doesn't apply to me, certainly Job doesn't apply to me. Yeah, that's so point. Far removed from where we are.
Yeah, we were so much more down the theological ramp that Job, Job doesn't have it. Oh, yeah, we all suffer. That's pretty much all there is to Job.
Right.
Just tells us that we all suffer.
Mm-hmm.
No, there are so many lessons here. And one of them is, how do you minister to people who are going through a difficult time?
Mm.
Cities of refuge is where a person in trouble runs to. Circles is when people in a group run to save or rescue the one who temporarily has been thrown into it captured the flag jail.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
They were trying to live their lives. They were trying to serve God. They were trying to do the best they can for their family, whatever, whatever problems came. And now they're sitting in a jail.
Yeah. Yeah. That verse you read also from verse 13 really, really helps me a lot, because I think with us, at least with what we do here on the radio show, I know I'm this way. I'm struggling to find the right words and say them in the right order to completely fix this problem.
Yeah.
But for an entire week, they just sat with him.
And they saw his grief was very great. I mean, they took the time to see him. This is not post-Freud or post-Skinner or post-Dr. Phil or whoever else is out there who tries to tell us how to talk to people going through a difficult time. No, this is a book that is 4,200 years old and is teaching us some of the basics of pastoral counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, don't say anything. Just be there for that person and love them and pray with them and encourage them. Don't have to talk about their grief. And that's what these friends did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And long story short, once the friends started speaking is when it all goes downhill, because they said all the wrong things.
Yeah, true. It's like they sit there
good
for a week.
They were quiet for the first part.
Yeah, they sit there for a week and they're all good. It's like, all right, guys, we're good. It's like, I guess we should start saying something. Like, no.
You were good. You were doing so well.
We had it.
Yeah, you were like counseling A plus. And then after that point, it was like counseling F minus. So.
Come on. They don't even get the F plus.
No, okay. F minus.
And even God got angry with them and said, you guys need to go to Job and get him to sacrifice for you, because I'm pretty ticked off with what you guys said.
Oh, man, you don't want that.
But here's the point. Through their conversation, Job saw Christ. Let me read these references very quickly. Job 9:32, he says, "For he is not a man," talking about God, "he is not a man as I am, that I may answer him and that we should go to court together. Nor is there any mediator between us who may lay his hand on us both." What Job is really saying is, where is the mediator that we have been promised?
Mm.
Where is the go-between, the person who can touch both God and man? I need him now.
That's right.
Of course, he's talking about Jesus. And then Job 19:25, he says, "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth." Jesus Christ hasn't been born yet, but Job can see him standing in the end of time, not just the 2,000 years ago incarnation, the virgin birth, but down through centuries, he can see Jesus standing on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says in verse 26, this is Job 19:26, "And after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I shall see God."
I mean, he understood that there was a resurrection.
Yes.
Yeah.
"Whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold not another, how my heart yearns within me." And then finally, Job 42:5, he says, "I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you." He's talking about Jesus. "That so far I only heard that you are coming, but now I see you." So, getting into a small group, whether it's Sunday school, Bible study, prayer group, a small group in your home, or a circle group, gender specific, the ultimate goal is to help people see Christ.
That's right.
And through his three friends, Job saw Christ.
Amen. So important for us. If you have questions about small group ministry or getting one started at your church or how to plug into one where you are, let us know by sending us a text at 252-582-5028. I love what you said, Dr. Shaw, that the goal of small groups, the goal of those 3 to 5 member same gender groups, is to help us see Christ.
Yes.
There's so much more on the line than just being together a social club. It's about meeting and fostering the community that's possible through Christ. Visit us online at clearviewtodayshow.com. Of course, you can partner with us financially on that same website. Scroll to the bottom and click that donate button and let us know that that gift is coming from our Clearview Today Show family. We love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow on Clearview Today.